And so this, of course, as Ian and Barry was mentioning, using this effective source approach. And so the outline itself is that I'm going to give a short summary of last year's results. And then I will talk about how to solve the outer boundary problem that we had last time using hyperboloidal slicings with matching to null infinity, and show some new and improved results and some concluding remarks. So last year we had a full implementation of the regularized scalar point source for circle orbits around Schwarzschild using a 3D multi-block finite difference code. And doing this work, we were able to get reasonable accuracy for this extraction of the cell force at the location of the particle. But there was some issues. And first of all, the source was specialized to circular orbits around Schwarzschild black holes. But as Ian and Barry just said, we should be able to soon get around that or get further to move to, for example, eccentric orbits and so on. But more importantly was that the lack of smoothness of the source caused high frequency noise in the extractor cell force at the location of the particle. And the noise was in the 3D finite difference code was only converting to second order with the grid spacing. So to get more accurate results, we would have to use a lot higher resolutions. And that would be very expensive because these ones are always somewhat expensive. But also we had a problem because we have sort of unphysical outer boundary conditions. So we are truncated, in this code we were truncating our domain at a finite spatial coordinate. And of course, what we are neglecting is the curvature of the space-time that is beyond that. And so at some point, when we have our boundary conditions where we impose that we have no incoming modes, at some point when the wave comes out, gets reflected, there should be some incoming modes corresponding to the tail. And when we neglect that and when that propagates back into the particle, then it will actually affect the extraction of the cell force and also extraction of the energy flux at some larger radii. So. So I've been waiting around for this, and that's okay. I know it's hard work. I was talking to Barry at some point, and he said that there was a possibility that you could get a smoother source that would help on this problem. So I didn't want to go into that, or didn't actually have time to go into trying to fix that using sort of more clever finite differencing schemes. So instead, I focused on fixing this problem. And it turns out that it was actually quite easy to do because somebody had already solved the problem for me. And so there was a paper from Senginoglu and Giglio. Oh, I misspelled Manuel's name. Sorry about that, Manuel. In this paper, where they write down exactly a specific recipe for how to compactify in the radial direction. And with an additional transformation of the time coordinate, so that you essentially have you start with spatial slices, and you have a transition region where they go to hyperboloidal slices, and these hyperboloidal slices asymptotes to spread plus at a finite coordinate radius. So the idea is you make a time transformation like this, where you have this is the normal time, and then you have this function that only depends on radius, which is called the height function. In addition, you compactify in the radial direction, so you introduce a rho coordinate, where r is rho divided by omega, and omega is a function of rho, and wherever omega goes to zero, of course, you go to infinity in the radial direction. And so you can choose this omega rho as 1 minus rho divided by s, so that when rho goes to s, this goes to zero, and that's the location of your infinite radius. So with this prescription, you have an infinity, radial infinity, located at a coordinate sphere of radius s. Then they show in the paper that if you choose the derivative of this height function, which is what you need for to do the coordinate transformation, if you choose it in this particular way, then you ensure that that the metric is regular at the location s, or which will be shown to be correspond to square plus. So it's only this term here is the only part of this is necessary in order to make that to make the metric regular. This term here they added for numerical purposes, and I'll come back to that in a little bit. So when you do this, the metric is regular, and you can actually show that the wave equation rescales in this particular way when you apply this transformation here. So where the tildes here are the standard wave equation in, for example, Schwarzschild or Kirchhoff coordinates or whatever, and then when you apply this transformations here, you get to this equation here.
Is that specific to Schwarzschild?
No.
So you think that's specific?
I think so. Yeah. As, I mean, they did it in general for Kerr space times in this paper here. And so the field that we're actually solving for in this region, in this equation here, is actually also rescaled by this omega here, and this in essence just means that this phi here is asymptotically corresponds to r times the normal scalar field. You have so of course for the background metric this the Ricci scalar is zero, but due to this compactification this is not equal to zero, and you have to take that into account when you write down the equations. So as I said, we want to still use the standard spatial slices in the interior, for example, where the source is located, because otherwise you would have to apply this coordinate transformation as well to the effective source. And also it's difficult. Well, it also makes it easier to handle the black hole in this kind of space time. So what we do is we introduce rho interior and rho exterior, where inside the interior we just have the omega equals to one, so we don't change the radial coordinate at all there. And then in this transition region, we smoothly transition from the one to the one minus rho over s that we need in order to have things nice and well behaved at square plus. So this f is a function that is zero when rho is less than rho interior. It's one for rho larger than rho exterior, and it varies smoothly from zero to one in this transition region. And then we also choose the height function in the same way. So height function is zero inside, so we don't do anything there. And then we have this transition to the value that we need in the exterior region. And you can actually show that with this choice, the coordinate speed of in and outgoing null characteristics at s, at the coordinate radius s, is that the ingoing speeds are zero, and the outgoing speeds are s squared divided by c squared. And so that's why we actually have this extra term here for the c squared, because if we chose zero here, then we would have very large speeds. And we would have to use very small time steps. But if we actually choose s to be c to be equal to s, then the outgoing coordinate speed of null rays at infinity is essentially equal to one, and we can use normal time steps. And so the bottom line is that there are no incoming physical modes, and that means that we actually don't have to apply a boundary condition there. Everything will just leave the domain automatically in finite coordinate time. So this is a summary of the results we had last time. What I'm showing here is we calculate the flux going into the black hole, the energy flux going into the black hole, the energy flux going out of some sphere, in this case of a constant finite radius. We do this at several different radii, and then we extrapolate that to infinite radius. And so these curves I showed also the last time, it's just dip curves for different numbers of detectors that we do into extrapolation for. So we are extracting from radius 50 up to 300 in steps of 50, and was able to and then we convert that to extrapolate flux to corresponds to the corresponding cell force that would actually act on the particle in that case. This is the time component of the cell force that would act on the particle. And we found pretty good agreement with the expected results for, this is for a circle orbit with radius 10, and this is the result from the frequency domain calculations. But you see the results here are quite noisy, even though we sort of get pretty close to the exact results. But then we have this thing where suddenly the results are not good anymore, and this is where the outermost detector comes into causal contact with the outer boundaries, and we have reflections of stuff coming back in. So with the new code, we get the following. Okay, so in this case, I actually turn on the source more smoothly compared to what I did before. And what you see here is, so that means that we start to see the source a little bit later, but also there's some this also has to travel all the way to scribe plus, but it still does in finite coordinate time. And you see we first of all, the curve is quite smooth. And within five orbits, we are actually really close to the expected exact value. And this is the difference, the relative difference between the exact value and the flux we extract as a function of time. So there's nothing happening for a while, and then we see some junk happening, and then it's always slowly tries to settle down. And you can see at the end of it, we are sort of down to a relative error of 10 to the minus 6, which I find quite impressive with a 3D code. And this is by the zero crossings. This is and so. And let me just go on to the concluding remarks here. So now with the outer boundary located as scribe plus, all the fields are outgoing. We don't have to apply any boundary conditions. We also at the inner boundary inside the black hole, we don't apply any boundary conditions because all the fields are outgoing there as well. So we have the nice case here where we have a numerical simulation where we don't actually have to apply any boundary conditions whatsoever. The computational domain can be made quite small with no risk of reflections. Actually, the results I showed here, the old run was done with the outer boundaries at 600 m. The new one was done with the outer boundaries with spy plus located at 100 m in coordinate space. So it's a saving of factor 6 in efficiency as well. And running for longer times does not require a larger domain because the waves are just going out, and we don't need to. We can just, so running for 10 times longer will be just 10 times more expensive. And we have all the background curvature information needed to account for the very, very late part of the tails, because we have the compactification and we go to spy plus. And we don't need to modify the effective source, as long as the interior radius of this transition region is chosen large enough that the source is essentially zero in this transition region. And the Hubble-Lloyd slices are already implemented and tested for Kerr and works there as well. I tested it by running putting in a scalar field configuration in the beginning and testing that I get the right tail behavior. And so now I'm in general now ready for the general source, and I think I will get them very soon from Ian and Barry. I can do both Schwarzschild and Kerr directly with Xcode. The code can fully handle Kerr. And so first will be to sort of tackle eccentric orbits and then hopefully soon long evolutions where we actually apply the cell force consistently at every single time step. And that's it. Well, this is so. This is converting the flux into the four-circle orbit.